Okay, we're beginning here at Masechet Makot. With regards to Masechet Makot, it is, as we will see, a continuation of Masechet Sanhedrin. There probably was a time when Masechet Makot was even incorporated inside of Masechet Sanhedrin. And we'll see in today's Gemara that the Masechet itself, the Mishnah itself, relies on information that comes from the last parak in Masechet Sanhedrin. And from here, most of the Rishonim note that the last parak of Sanhedrin was not parak Achelek, but rather parak Elohein HaNechnakim, because the Mishnah that they reference here, that the Gemara says, connects this Mishnah in Makot back to Sanhedrin, is connected to Elohein HaNechnakim, which makes it that it was the last parak in Sanhedrin, and this continues from Sanhedrin. In terms of the topics of the Masechta, the topics of the Masechta are basically the items that weren't covered in Masechet Sanhedrin. Masechet Sanhedrin deals with issues that are of a criminal nature that one gets punished by Beit Din for, but over there we dealt with capital punishment. So we dealt with the Arba Mitot Beit Din. Over here, we have the other possible punishments that can be given out by Beit Din, and they fall into three categories. One category is Malkot, which is the main theme of the Masechta, and why it's called Masechet Makot. There's also Galut, which is an alternative to Mitah. When an individual kills Vishogeg, then the Torah prescribes that he's sent into Galut, and so we will discuss that punishment in this Masechet. And the last of them is monetary payments, where the monetary payments are not necessarily because of issues like Bava Kama, Bava Metzia, Bava Batra, where there is an issue between parties, but monetary obligations that stem from the actions of the individuals themselves, including cases of Edim Zomamim. And over here, the first parak and the topic of the first parak is Edim Zomamim. Part of that is because it continues from the previous Masechta, Masechet Sanhedrin, where we dealt with Edim Zomamim. Because otherwise, Malkot, or the punishment of Malkot, which we will discuss later in the Masechta, should have been the primary topic and the first topic of the Masechta. And so even though you would have expected them to start the Masechet with Malkot, which is the main theme or topic of the Masechta, nevertheless it starts with Edim Zomamim, as the Ritva says, for two reasons. One is that it's a continuation of that Mishnah in Elohein HaNechnakim, which spoke about Edim Zomamim. It has to do with partly Beit Din and Sanhedrin, the protocols of Beit Din. And number two is the fact that Edim Zomamim result in times either with a punishment of monetary compensation or in Malkot. As well as the fact that we're going to see later on in today's daf that the Parshia of Malkot is connected integrally to Edim Zomamim. And therefore, Edim Zomamim may be the right thing to start with when you're speaking about the issue of Malkot. Therefore, the Masechet begins with the issues of Edim Zomamim. In each of these punishments, as is true with most punishments, there are three aspects of this. This is basic criminology, which is that when you punish an individual, you are trying, in some senses, to accomplish three things. One of them is punishment. You want a person to know if they do something wrong, if they act inappropriately, that there will be repercussions to their action. And that is a punishment. There's also, now this isn't obvious necessarily in criminology, but most people believe this, there's an aspect of kapara, atonement that the individual is doing or accomplishing through the punishment that they receive. Of course, when it's prescribed by the Torah and prescribed by God, then we assume that there is a form of kapara associated with it. And that we find in the Torah that after the person gets Malkot, then they are considered to be achicha, the return to their former status that they had before. And the last thing is deterrence, which is we don't want other people acting in this manner. That is obvious by the case of Edim Zomamim, which we discussed in Sanhedrin, where it has to be done in a public fashion and everybody needs to see and hear about it. And that's true by the Arba Mitot Beit Din, but it's also true by Malkot. It's also true by the punishments that are met out over here, that there's an aspect of deterrence by having the person be embarrassed. It's done in a public manner. It's announced, so on and so forth. That makes it into a punishment that has three aspects to it, a punishment, atonement, and deterrence associated with it. And it's true of the three topics that we're going to deal with within the Masechet. Now, the Masechet opens up with Edim Zomamim, which is a difficult sugya in of itself, because you have, in general, when witnesses come to testify, they speak to the facts of the case, and then you can have other witnesses who have a different view, or they think that the facts of the case were different, and then you have what's called edot mucheshet, that you have edim that disagree about the facts of the case, or disagree about the circumstances surrounding the case, and those edim, one would offset the other, and neither of them will necessarily be punished, because you don't know who is lying. They both might be disqualified from being edim in another case, because by definition, one set of edim is not telling the truth. But nevertheless, we can't punish anybody because we don't know. On the other hand, here by edim zomamim, we assume that one set of edim is telling the truth, and the other set of edim are now incriminated by those edim, even though really it's a disagreement. So part of that is dealt with in the way that it's done, or the manner in which edim zomim happen, which is, you could not have testified about this case because imanu ayitem, that you were with us. So the second edim that come and testify are not arguing with them about the facts of the case. They're not even arguing about whether they're right or wrong. They simply say, you can't testify because you were with us. So that testimony allows us to say it's not an edut mukheshet. It is not an argument about facts, but it is a statement that your edut is disqualified. It's still one man's testimony, or really two people's testimony versus another two people's testimony. And in essence, they're arguing about whether they were there or they weren't there. In the end, Gemara says that Edim Zomamim, or an Eid Zomim, is Chidushu. It is a Chidush of the Torah, that we believe the second set of Edim versus the first set of Edim. When they say Imanu Ayitem, they trump the first set of Edim. And that we'll get to in the Gemara that has ramifications about the Dinim of Edim Zomamim, especially with regards to, number one, the ability to extrapolate from the dinim of Edim Zomim to anywhere else. And number two is, when exactly does an Eid Zomim become an Eid Zomim? That we saw as Makloket, Abaye and Rava, and whether it's Mikana Lava, Ulama Freya. And one of those issues is that it's a Chidushu. It is a Chidush that Eid Zomim are incriminated. And therefore, you might have to limit the extent of that Chidush, and that might impact as to when we classify them as Edim Zomamim. Now, Edim Zomamim also have impact in general on testimony, which is a principle that we saw in the Gemara in Sanhedrin and that the Baalei Tosafot will bring up today, which is, Kol Edut Sheata Yechol Azima, any Edut that cannot be subject to Edim Zomamim, meaning be made into Edim Zomamim, it's not a good Edut. That is for obvious reasons, which is that we want the Edim who come and testify to not think that they have some immunity or they are protected from the law, and they can come here and testify even falsely and have no repercussions to it. As long as they know that someone can come in and incriminate them for their false testimony and then they'll be held accountable for it, then it's a deterrence against people lying. It will dissuade people from entering into testimony and lie. Aside from the shvuot and the standing before Beit Din in terms of telling the truth, there's a deterrence, which is somebody could walk in here and say, you were with us, and there's no way you could testify about this case. That factor is important enough that we don't consider someone to be giving a edut unless they have that fear that is behind them. And so that, again, edim zomim, even if you don't make someone into an edim zomim, it's always in the background because it is the mechanism by which we try to ensure that people are telling the truth when they come and testify because they have the fear of being caught as edim zomamim. Now the Mishnah begins, Ketzad ha'edim nasim zomamim. How do edim zomamim become zomamim? Me'edim anu bish ploni shu ben gushel ben chulutza. They testify about a kohen that he was the son of a divorcee, or he was the son of a chalutza, a woman who had chalitza performed with her. So now, in terms of the two cases here, ben grusha is pretty straightforward because that is a din d'oraita. A kohen is not allowed to marry a divorcee. So if they say that this individual's mother was a divorcee before she ever met his father, then clearly he is a ben grusha, and that has d'oraita Torah ramifications. On the other hand, ben chalutza is only a restriction de Rabbanan. De Rabbanan restricted a chalutza to a kohen because she looks like or is too similar to a grusha. And so therefore a kohen is restricted from marrying a chalutza. But that's only a din derabbanan. So in that case, question as to why Ben Chalutza is brought over here. The Rabban and many of his Talmidim suggest that it is, like many places in Shas, that these two are always brought together. Grusha and Chalutza is always brought together, and therefore in the Mishnah here, it's just brought as Shigrata Lashon, which means that it's just the normal way to say it. You always say Ben Grusha, Ben Chalutza, and you stick them together. But in our case, Ben Chalutza, or the din of Ben Chalutza, would not necessarily be true over here. Whereas the Rambam believes that one does get Malkot in this case, because in the end, you tried to be posel someone from the Kuhuna. It doesn't matter if you're trying to posel them deoraita or posel them derabanan. You are still subject to the Malkot because you lied when you came to testify. And in lying and doing so, then they are subject to the same punishment as if someone who creates a problem deoraita. Now that might relate to the latter half of today's daf as to why you get Malkot in this case. There are different views amongst the Rishonim as to whether you get Malkot because of Lotanei Biracha Yitzhakar, or whether you get it from Vayayim bin Hakota Rasha. And so that might influence over here whether you get Malkot with lying in the Din Derabbanan because you just testified falsely, or do you only get Malkot where you were attempting to do something or change the status of something midoraita. In Omrim, Yaseh Zeh Ben Grusha Ben Chalutza Taktav, we don't say that the individual who testified over here now and was caught lying in this case because other Edim came along and incriminated them and said, Imanu Aitim, you were with us. So normally we do, Basitim Lo Kasher Zamam Lasot Achiv. We do to these Edim like they wanted to do the other party. They wanted to make the other party to a Ben Grusha Ben Chalutza. So let's make them into a Ben Grusha Ben Chalutza, assuming that they are Kohanim. So we don't make the Edim Zomimim into a Ben Grusha Ben Chalutza, Ella Loke Arbaim. They get a Malkut of Arbaim. So what we find here is, in a situation where you cannot accomplish Kajer Zamam Lasot Achiv, and we'll see why, then alternatively you have to get Malkut. So Vasitim Lo Kajer Zamam Lasot Achiv has two possible outcomes. Either one outcome is you do to them like the what they wanted to do to the other party, and if that can be accomplished, fine. If that cannot be accomplished, we give them Malkot. Some Rishonim, Rabbi Tosfot included over here, suggest that the reason that the Mishnah picked an example of a Kohen, and we're only speaking about Kohanim over here, is because, we'll see it in the Gemara, that the continuation for Elohim and Nechnakim topically was to do with a Kohen. So since the case in the Mishnah and Sanhedrin dealt with a Kohen or a Bat Kohen, so over here, we also continued along that line with issues that deal with Kehuna. But Enoch and Amit, you could have explained this case, or it had been better to explain it as a case of a Mamzer. An individual comes and testifies about another party that they're a Mamzer, and then we find that they're eating Zomimim, then maybe you would have thought that the person who testified should become a Mamzer. That has ramifications not only for the case of a Kohen, but also has ramifications in terms of a Yisrael. Because here, making someone into a Ben Grusha Ben Chalutza is only meaningful for a Kohen. So if a Kohen testifying about another Kohen, then you could say that. But if Yisrael is testifying, it really doesn't have ramifications on the Yisrael to be called a Ben Grusha Ben Chalutza. So the example of Mamzer would have been better. And these Rishonim believe that the reason it picked an example of a Kohen is because of the connection back to the previous Masechta. Others, like the Ritva, suggest that it even has application by Yisrael. Because a Yisrael who's deemed to be a Ben Grusha or Ben Chalutza is, in essence, somebody who is Pasul de Kuhuna. And therefore, if we give him a certain Pasul, not only will it affect him, it will affect his wife's status, as well as the status of his daughters, and his daughter's ability to marry into the Kuhuna. So if we give him a status of a Chalal, which is basically what a Ben Grusha and Ben Chalutza is, then even though you're right, as Yisrael, inherently there's no impact on him, but there is an impact. It does have ramifications, and therefore this has application even to a Yisrael and not just to a Kohen. And so they see no problem in bringing this example versus the example of a Mamzer. Mamzer is a much less frequent case or an example than the case of Ben Grusha Ben Chalutza. So they picked a case that was more common, as we see in other places in Shas, that this issue came up, and that were Kohanim who married Grushot, and that the only way to get out of that problem is they have to take a neder berabim, that they won't go back to the woman. But we see that there were definitely cases like that that happened, versus mamzer, which was a much rarer situation. So according to those Rishonim, then Ben Grusha Ben Chalutza is application not to, only to a kohen, but also to Israel. Whereas the Ramban says that the bigger chiddush here is the fact that when you say that a kohen is a Ben Grusha Ben Chalutza, not only have you impact on the individual, you also have monetary ramifications from that. When a person says that a kohen is a Ben Grusha Ben Chalutza, it's not simply a problem in terms of their status and in terms of whether they're classified as a halal or not a halal. It also has monetary ramifications, which are that this kohen can no longer eat truma. This kohen can no longer participate in the eating of korbanot. You're causing him monetary loss, not just a loss of status in terms of him being a halal, which then raises the question as to why one does not have to make monetary restitution for the losses they cause the kohen from his inability now to eat truma or participate in kodoshim. The edim should have to compensate for the losses that they would have created. So one easy way to deal with that, Meiri suggests, is that we have a principle that will come up later in the Masechta, that you can't be loka umishalem. You can't get both malkot and tashlumim in this case. And therefore, since you're going to get malkot, we're not going to have the tashlumim. The Ramban suggests that the problem of tashlumim over here is either that it was grama, because you're not the direct cause of the loss. It's an indirect cause of the loss. Because his status changed, therefore he can't eat truma anymore. Since it's an indirect cause, grama ben zikim is patur, and therefore we can't obligate the idim zomamim for that. Or, the Ritva says we're dealing with a monetary obligation that is not finite in nature, and we can't calculate it at all. Since we don't know if he would have eaten truma, and even if he did eat truma, we don't know how much truma he would have eaten. We really don't know what the monetary loss that was caused here. Since we cannot come up with a monetary amount that was the loss that was caused here, then we don't penalize through the monetary punishment, rather through the malkot. Tosafot over here says, don't we have a problem now? If we're not giving these edim, kasher zamam lasod de'achiv, isn't this an edut, shei ata yechol azima? This is an edut that you can't make into zomamim, because you can't do them, kasher zamam lasod de'achiv. The Baal Tosafot answer very simply, that the punishment of Malkot over here is kasher zamam lasod de'achiv. That's the appropriate hazama punishment for the edim zomamim over here. And therefore it's considered or classified as edut she'ata yochol hazima. Tosafot then goes on to say, wait a minute, in Sanhedrin we suggested when you can't give the person the mitah that they are trying to impose on the victim, it's called edut she'ata yochol hazima, even though they're going to get Malkot. Because we're going to see in later in today's daf, when you don't accomplish kasher zamam, you give the individuals malkot. If that's the case, even in cases where you give an alternate punishment, we don't consider that to be a edut she'ata yochol hazima. So Tosafot differentiates between mitah and the cases here. In the cases here, the person is in violation of a lav. So we can't give them the punishment that the Torah prescribes for kasher zamam, but we're giving them malkot, which is an appropriate punishment for the violation of a lav. And therefore, it's viewed as being a adut she'ata yochol hazima. In the case of capital punishment, if you're going to give the person malkot instead of capital punishment, then that's real deviation from what would have been the punishment this person deserves for what they're doing. Therefore, it's classified as adut she'ata yochol hazima. Even though, as we saw in the Gemara in Sanhedrin, there were deot that corporal punishment was akin or within the category of capital punishment. Nevertheless, they're different enough that it is not the punishment you would have expected in this case. Therefore, it's deemed to be a neidut she'ata yochol hazima. That's the first answer Tosafot gives. The second answer Tosafot gives is based on the Gemara and the Amud Bet, which is that the Gemara over there says the reason you get malkot in this case is because of the pasuk of Vayayim bin Hakot HaRasha. It says whether that is because Vayayim bin Hakot HaRasha or Lo Ta'aneh B'Recha Yitzhakar is the source for the malkot you're going to get. It's not sourced out of kasher zamam. Meaning, the reason that you need to have edut she'ata yochol hazima is because of the pasuk of kasher zamam. So where kasher zamam is applicable, then we have the rule of it has to be edut she'ata yochol hazima. But in cases where there is no kasher zamam to be done, and the punishment they get is malkot, there's also no application of the din of edut she'ata yochol hazima. And therefore these are exempt from that because they don't fall into the category of kasher zamam at all. As Tosafot says over here, the mehecha napkalan debina neidut shatay yichol zimam a kasher zamam. Vamuchach beGemara the kasher zamam lo nichtav the gabe eidut de ben grusha. It was not applicable to the eidut of ben grusha whatsoever. Now, the next case the Mishnah brings is, they testify about an individual that he killed b'shogeg, and therefore he is required to go to Galut. On the other hand, the Ritva suggests that the case here is a case where this individual, they say, was incriminated in another Beit Din to go to Galut. And now they're coming to another Beit Din and saying he was already found guilty in another Beit Din to go to Galut. We don't say that in order to accomplish when they're found to be Edim Zomumim, we don't say that these Edim go into Galut. Ella loke arbaim. In this case, they get Malkut arbaim, similar to the previous case where you can't carry out the Kashir Zomam Lasot Achiv, you get Malkut instead of the punishment itself that you were trying to impose on the other party. Now, the Balei Tosafot ask a fundamental question, which is, how can you testify about someone that they are Chayav Galut? Because you're testifying about their intent. And the individual can always come along and say, I did it intentionally, and therefore I'm not subject to galut. So how can Edim ever come and testify about someone that they are chayav galut if it all has to do with the intention? So the Balei Tosafot give two answers. One answer is that raglaim ledavar. There's circumstantial evidence which indicates that he clearly did not do it intentionally, and that it was an unintentional accident. Or, they give a second answer, is a case where the other party is shotek, he is silent. The individual that they come to testify against doesn't answer. Had he said, no, I did not kill, then he could have said, no, I meant, I didn't kill b'shogeg, I killed b'mezid. He could reinterpret his wording to fit, to say that it shouldn't be chayav galut if he's found guilty. Now then, if he's shotek, if he's silent, that silence is acquiescence, and he accepts their determination that he killed b'shogeg. And in that case, we would punish him with galut based on the testimony of the Edim. That's what the Balei Tosafot suggests. Now the Gemara just asks about the Mishnah in general two questions. Haketzad ein Edim nasim zomimim mibayile. The header for the Mishnah should not have been how are Edim zomimim made into Edim zomimim. The Mishnah doesn't talk about a case where the Edim zomimim are made into Edim zomimim. The Mishnah talks about cases where we fail to make them into Edim Zomimim. We don't do Kashir Zomam Nasot Achiv. So the header that is written in the Mishnah, Ketzad Edim Nasim Zomimim, it would have been better to write, Ketzad Ein Edim Nasim Zomimim. How did the Edim not get made into Zomimim, or how did they not have Kashir Zomam Nasot Achiv? That's what it should have written. Ve'od, in addition to that, Mikutoni Lekaman, later on it says, Aval, Amru lahem, hey achatem midim, shari b'oto yom atem eitem imanu. How could you testify on that day about this case? Because on that day you were with us. Haru elu zomamim. That is the case. So those are considered to be edim zomamim. So if you have later on in the Masechta, you have an explicit Mishnah that explains how you become edim zomamim. So, either you see this as two separate questions. One question is, how come our Mishnah starts with the header, Ketzad Edim Nasim Zomimim? It should have started with Ketzad Ein Edim Nasim Zomimim. And then the second question is, why is the Mishnah asking the question at all, Ketzad Nasim Zomimim? Because further on, the Mishnah itself tells us how you become an Eid Zomim. So the header itself makes no sense if later on, the Mishnah is going to explicitly tell you how they become Edim Zomimim, and therefore that other Mishnah either should have been up here in the beginning, or this header should have led you to whatever is written in that Mishnah. So that's the way Rashi explains it. The Balei Tosafot see the Be'od as being just an extension of the original question, the strengthening of the first question, which is, even if you want to say that what is accomplished in our Mishnah is Hazama, and therefore you have the proper header over here, Ketzad Edim Nasim Zomimim, and we're giving examples of it because that's what's going on in the Mishnah. The Gemara says that's just not true. There's a Mishnah coming up that tells you how Edim become Edim Zomimim. Zamam is only in a case where you give them the punishment that they were trying to mete out to the other party. When you give them an alternate punishment, that's not called Zomimim. So then, Ketzed Ayun Nesim Zomamim would have been the wrong header over here, since we define it differently later on. Because of that, it would make no sense to say here, Ketzed Ayun Nesim Nesim Zomamim, so it only serves to strengthen the first question as to the wrong language being used here. So for those two questions, the Gemara says that we need to understand why you would ever start the Masechta speaking in that way. The Gemara says, Tanan Hotam Koyi. This Mishnah in the beginning of Makot connects to the Mishnah that we saw at the end of Sanhedrin. As you can see from the daf quoted in Sanhedrin, it's not at the end of Sanhedrin. It's in Eluheina Nechnakim. But as we noted before, that in the Yerushalmi, in the Seder Mishnayot, Eluheina Nechnakim comes after Perkachelik, and therefore Eluheina Nechnakim would have been the last Mishnayot that were in the Masechta. And over there it says, Kol HaZomamim, Maktimim lotamita. All Edim Zomamim get the same death penalty as the people they were trying to incriminate. Chutz mizomame bat kohen uboala. With the exception of Zomamim, Edim Zomamim, who incriminate a bat kohen, uboala, and the one who consorts with a bat kohen, shein maktimim lotamita, that they don't have the same punishment. So this refers to the case of a Bat Kohen, which we know in the Parshat Emor, is subject to the punishment of Srefa, instead of either, the question is, Skila, according to Rabbi Shimon, according to the Chachamim, if it was Skila, then she would have gotten Skila, but Srefa instead of Chenek. But she has a higher form of punishment because of the fact that Etavia hi Mechalelet, because she profanes her father. In that case where there's a consorting between a Bat Kohen and another individual, first of all, the Bat Kohen is subject to Srefa. That's true of her, not true of Boala, not true of the man that consorts with her. In addition, it's also not true of the Edim Zomamim. If they came to make her Chayevet a din of Srefa and they're caught as Edim Zomamim, they do not get Srefa. They get the punishment that they man would have gotten in that case, the Boel would have gotten in that case, which is either Skila or Chenek, depending if you hold like Rabbi Shimon or the Chachamim. That was the last Mishnah in Eloheinu Nechnakim, and this continues off of that, which is, that's an example of a case where the Edim Zomamim don't get the punishment that they were trying to mete out on the victim. So to over here, you continue with that in the beginning of Makot. These are examples of cases where the Edim Zomamim will not get the same punishment as the victim that they are trying to incriminate. Ella, the Mita Acheret. They will be subject to a different Mita. Now, first of all, Makdimim. The way that the language is written here, it says, She'ein Makdimim lo ta Mita. They don't go to that Mita. Ella Mita Acheret. But they get the other Mita. Rashi says the word makdimim over here means klomar einlem letafot the mita acheret ela mashkimim lota mita shnigbar ba'dino shel nidon, that we don't look at any other mita, but rather we look at the mita that the gmar din was. So they shouldn't think about another mita, because you're going to get the mita that you tried to incriminate the victim with the exception of this case. And Tosafot explains that what Rashi means is, then you do it immediately. You try to do it as swiftly, as expeditiously as possible, so that there is no inui adin, because there's nothing else to anticipate. The punishment they're going to get is so obvious. So Rashi just reads the makdimim as being a matter of language that indicates to you that this is what you should understand will happen to you, and you shouldn't expect anything else, because it's always this way. The Tosafot sees in the word makdimim actually a halachic ramification. And that is based on the fact that the Tosafot says the Gemara has two limudim to teach us that a bat kohen and a boel, you only get the punishment of the boel and not of the bat kohen. One of them is, vasitim lo kasher zamam lasot le'achiv, and the Gemara learns from that, achiv velo achoto. That's one limud. In addition to that, the Tosafot in Sanhedrin says the same thing, and he brings it over here as well, that there's a drush of it, aviyahi mechalelet. He, velo boala, her, and not the one who consorts with her, he, velo zomameha. So the Bali Tosafot say, why do you need two limudim? Why do you need a limud of achi velo achoto? And why do you need a limud of he, velo zomameha? It also says, if you just had he, et avia he mechalelet, then you would have thought that it means he velo boala, not he velo zomameh. You wouldn't have assumed that. So then once you have the limit of lasot achiv, then you say that he velo boala, he velo zomameh. So then you ask the question, well, if you had achiv already, then what do you need the etaviyah he mechalalet? That Tosfot says, he teaches you that even when there's no man that is chayav in this case, either because he passed away, he's not in the case in front of us, or he was a minor, you would have thought if you just had the achiv, that would tell you that only when the man is brought to trial do they have achiv mitah. Without that, they wouldn't have achiv mitah. He, velo bo'ala, he velo zomameh, teaches you that even when she is the only party that's being incriminated over here, that they are given a chiyuv mitah. Then Tosafot also explains that the word maktimim over here has to do with a issue that we discussed in Sanhedrin, which is when Beit Din is unable to execute the death penalty that is prescribed for the individual, how do we know that they're given permission to kill the individual in any way they can? So there the Gemara dealt with Ritzicha and Goel Adam. And it says that in both those psukim, we have a specific limud that teaches you that Beit Din has much wider berth in punishing the individual. And if you can't kill them in the way that you're supposed to, you can kill them in any way possible. So that is what the Gemara calls Shnei Ketuvim Abayim Kechad. You have two psukim telling you a din. And once you have two psukim telling you in the same din, it cannot be extrapolated. It does not become a paradigm. What Balei Tosafot suggests over here, that's only true with regards to executing outside of the Arba Mitot Beit Din. Outside the Arba Mitot Beit Din by a Rotzeach and by a Goel Adam, you have a right, if you can't do it in the way that's prescribed, that you're allowed to do it in any way possible. On the other hand, in normal cases where you don't have that right, you still have a right as Beit Din to execute them based on the prescribed punishment. If you can't do that, you can use one of the other three mitot Beit Din if that is possible or easier for them to do if you can't carry out the prescribed mitah. And that's what it means, maktimim. Our first choice is to give them the mitah, which is what the boel would have gotten. But that's only maktimim. If we don't do that, then we're allowed to give them any one of the other three mitot Beit Din. And so Tosafot sees in the word maktimim, not like Rashi, just a linguistic statement over here, but rather a halachic statement of maktimim, which means this is the first choice out of the arba mitot Beit Din. But if we fail to do it, and the only way to get him is to use one of the other three mitot Beit Din, then Beit Din has permission to do it, and that's why it uses the term maktimim over here. Then, that's the mission at the end of Elohim and Achnakim, and then it would continue here. V'yesh, edim zomimim achirim, shein osim behem din hazama kol ikar. And there are other edim zomimim, where they don't even have a semblance of the punishment that they were trying to impose. At least there, they're gonna get a chiyuv mitah, number one. And number two is, the chiyuv mitah is similar to the one of the boel. Not to the bat kohen, but at least to the boel. But we have other cases, where you're not going to be punished at all in a manner that has to do with what you were trying to impose in the other party. But instead you're going to get the 40 lashes. Ketzit. What are those cases? We don't say that you get punished in kind being made into a ben grusha ben chutza. You get the punishment of malkot. And so that is the context in which our Mishnah is written, which is not, this is a general principle, how do you make edim zomimim, but rather the ketzad is, ketzad edim nasim zomimim, which is, how do we have a case where they're made into edim zomimim, but they will not get the punishment that they tried to impose on the victim that they were lying about. And that is the cases that we bring in our Mishnah, and we'll see later on that there's a braita that brings additional cases that fall into this category. This Mishnah is telling you that there are other ways to be considered kasher zamam lasot achiv. That this, even though they're not getting the punishment that would have been met out to the victim, they're still considered to be edim zomimim. Or, as Rashi explains it, that even though later on they're going to spell out what edim zomimim are, over here there's another reason to spell it out because of this uniqueness in the punishment here, which is not kasher zamam lasot achiv. So now the Gemara wants to know, mina hanemileg. How do we know that what's said in our Mishnah is true, which is that when they testified about a ben grusha, ben chalutza, that they actually are given malkot and not made into a ben grusha, ben chalutza. Amar Rav Yehoshua ben Levi, Damar Kro, the pasuk says, Vasitim lo kashir zamam, lo velo lizaro. You could only punish him you cannot punish his offspring. So the problem is that if you make someone into a ben grusha ben chalutza, it has ramifications beyond they themselves. It has ramifications for them, for then all of their offspring, and actually for their wife as well, because the kohen is not considered to be a kohen chalal. He makes his wife into a chalala, and all of his children will be chalalim. That's whether they're boys and they cannot be kohanim, or if they're girls and they can't marry kohanim because they are chalalot. So you're imposing upon him a punishment that has impact on him and all of his offspring. Now the truth is, that's what he was trying to do to the other party. He was making the other party to a ben grusha, ben chalutza. It would have impact on him and all of his children. So, enochanami, that's exactly what he was trying to do to someone else. Why not do the same to him? That's because Gzeirat HaKatuv, which says, Veshitim lo kashir zamam, lo, only he gets punished, not his offspring. Veliv selu lididei. So then, just set up the case that we make him into a kohen chalal. Lo liv selu lizarei. And we will not disqualify his offspring. Meaning that you will create a case, we can establish that his status will be changed, but his offspring status will not be changed, and in that way it will be asitim lo, kasher samam lasod achiv. He will be punished with what he tried to do to the victim. And then in that way, you both accomplish gzeirat hakatuv and also kasher samam. Where it says, be'inan kasher samam lasod veleka. That doesn't accomplish kasher samam lasod achiv. Yes, you're penalizing only him. So therefore you are within the bounds of the pasuk, basitim lo. But on the other hand, you've lost kasher zamam lasot l'achiv. Because his intent was to make the other individual a halal, which means that he would ruin him and all of his offspring. If you, in return, then only affect him and not his offspring, you aren't doing to him kasher zamam lasot l'achiv. You're not doing to him like he was trying to do to the other party. So since you can't accomplish that, there's no reason to do it. And once you can't accomplish that, you get malkot. Obviously, the Gemara will have to answer as to why you get malkot in this case. But at least we know why we're not going to give him kasher zamam lasot achiv because of this gzeret hakatuv of lo velo lizaro. Tosfot over here says, when if that's the case, then why don't we use the case of mitzri sheni? And mitzri sheni, the child won't be affected because he's a mitzri shlishi who's allowed to join the cow. So in a case where he didn't come and testify about someone that they're a mitzri sheni, then why shouldn't they get kasher zamam lasot achiv? Because if you make them into a mitzri sheni, it will only affect them and not their children, the same way they would only affect the victim and not his children. So the Baalei HaTosafot say that's not exactly true, because a mitzri sheni is posel, his wife. She is classified as a chalala, and therefore she couldn't marry a kohen afterwards because of the fact that she had biyah with a mitzri sheni. So there's impact beyond the individual itself, and it would still be excluded from asitim lo, velo lezaro or lo ishto. Whereas the Meiri suggests that the implications are not about his wife, but about his father. If you make him into a mitzri sheni, then you're actually making his father into a mitzri rishon, which has implications beyond the fact that you are affecting these edim as being a mitzri sheni. You're affecting other parties that now are being called that his father was a mitzri rishon. And so it has broader implications than the individual themselves, and therefore you can't accomplish, because there's zamam, without violating the Zeret HaKatuv of lo and not anyone else. Barpado Omer, Kavachomer. It's actually a Kavachomer, a logical argument, which is, Maha Michalel, Eino Mitchalel. Even though someone who is a Michalel, he can create a Chalal, Eino Mitchalel, he himself doesn't necessarily become a Chalal. So for instance, a Kohen who marries a Grusha, he himself does not become a Chalal, even though he makes the woman who he marries into a chlala, and the children are born of that marriage into chalalim. So despite the fact that he makes other people into chalalim, he himself is not affected by it. And as long as he divorces this woman, then he will no longer be classified as a kohen chalal. While he's married to her, he gets a disqualification. But as soon as he divorces her, he'll be back to being a kohen. Haba lichalel, over here where you have people who are attempting to make someone into a chalal, velo chilel, and they didn't succeed at it, enu din shelo yitchalel, then certainly they should not become chalalim. So the point being, and this has to do with a gzeret hakatuv that we'll get to later in the Gemara, which is that the pasuk says, kasher zamam lasod achiv, that only time you get punished as edim zomamim is if you're caught attempting to make the victim into a chalal, or attempting to do something to a victim. If you are successful at doing it, which is called kasher asah, that you did already, there is no punishment. And that is, the Gemara says, kasher zamam, below kasher asah. It's what you planned or intended to do. You were in the process of accomplishing it, but you were not successful. If you were successful at accomplishing it, and the person is put to death, the person gets malkot, the person was made into ben gushah chalutza, there's no longer a din of kasher zamam, a punishment of giving you what you were trying to give to the other. It's gzeirat ha-katuv, that it only works by zamam and not asah. And so now, what Bar Padua says is, in a case where a kohen marries a grusha, in that case, the kohen himself makes everyone else into halalim, yet he himself is not affected, he's not a halal, then over here, these edim, who are attempting to make someone into a halal, they're not actually making someone into a halal, they're simply attempting to do it, and they fail at it, then certainly over there, they should not be made into halalim. Matkif la ravina, imkain, bitalta, torat, edim, zomamim. If that's the case, you'll never have a case of edim zomamim, which is that the Kal v'chomer over here would suggest that if you were successful at accomplishing something, then of course your punishment should be greater. If you're only attempting to accomplish something, then your punishment should be lighter. So in this case, if they were successful at making the person to ben grusha ben chalutza, they would not be punished. So now if you're telling me when they're successful, they're not punished, that certainly when they only attempted, then they should not be made into halalim. And that's the exact opposite of what the din of Edim Zomimim is. The din of Edim Zomimim is when you attempt, you will be found to be Edim Zomimim and you're punished. If you succeeded, then there's no din of Edim Zomimim. But based on your logic, it would work the other way around. If when you succeed, there's no punishment, then certainly when you only attempted, there should be no punishment. So the logic that you're laying out here would undermine Edim Zomimim in general, umasokel, because if you follow through with your logic, masokel eno niskal, just like a person who, according to Rashi, these are edim zomamim, who lied, and they were not incriminated, they were not found to be edim zomamim until after Beitin executed the individual based on their testimony. So masokel, if they were successful at giving someone a mitah through skila, eno niskal, then edim zomamim don't get skila. Habali skol, someone who comes to attempt to give a person skila, velo sakal, but they were not successful at it, enu din shlo yisakel, certainly they should not get skila. If you do that, you basically undermine the whole concept of edim zomamim. Again, the gzeirat ha-katuv makes it that it's kasher zamam and not kasher asah. If you then apply logic to it, you would say, well, if kasher asah doesn't get punished, then certainly kasher zamam doesn't get punished. And in that way, you would undermine Edim Zomimim completely. That's the way that Rashi learns it. The Bali Tosafot over here bring a number of questions on Rashi's explanation of the Gemara at this point, including why did the Gemara pick the example of Skila? Why is Skila different than any other punishment that Edim Zomimim get? Number one. Number two is if you were speaking about a case, not about the punishment, but a case, you would say, Ma HaHoreh, someone who murders Eino Nerag, mean that Edim Zomim that kill don't get killed, then certainly someone only attempts to be Horeg, they certainly should not be killed. The language that you would have used would have been different. What's unique about Skila? And therefore they bring down the Kach Perush Rabbeinu Tam, therefore the Bali Tosafot bring a Shita Rabbeinu Tam, the Hachi Kamar. This is how to read the Gemara. Masokel Eino Niskal, Perush Adam Shesokel Chaviro Ba'avenim, a person who stones his friend, and the individual dies because of that skila, umate, dinidon v'sayif below b'skila. Person gets punishment not with the way that they kill the individual, but the standard punishment that one gets when they kill another party. Killing is subject to a punishment of cherev, punishment of sayif, punishment by the sword. An individual comes and stones them, will only get sayif, and certainly someone who is attempting it shouldn't get punished at all. So in a case where someone actually stones another party, they don't get the mitah of skila. Then certainly in a case where edim come to testify the person is deserving of skila and they're not successful, certainly there they shouldn't get skila. And in that way you would bevatel the din of edim zomamim. But what the Rabbeinu Tam says he accomplishes is that they, in that way you're not undermining edim zomamim begamrei. Because then the question would be, why did he even come up with this logic? It's so obvious that you can't say that. But rather you would undermine Eden Zomimim in certain circumstances, and because of that, we will not call it a valid kabachomer or valid logic. Rather, we have to rely on what we said earlier, which is the reason is because of the Gzeret HaKatuv, Asitim Lo, Kashuz Hamam, Lo, Velo Lezaro, and that's why we have a different din over here. Now the Gemara says, Meidim Anu Vishponish Uchayav Galut, Menahani Mile. How do we know by the case of Galut, where you attempt to give someone a punishment of Galut, that you don't get that same punishment if you're found to be an Eid Zomeim? Amarish Lakish, Damakra, the Pasuk says, Hu Yanus El Echat Arim, says that he, the person who killed Vishugeg, he has to run to one of the Ari Miklat, who, the Lozomimim. Again, we have a miut that only the party that did this is subject to the punishment of Galut, not any other party. Again, we have an attempt to say that you don't need the Xerat HaKatuv, but it is a logical argument. Umahu Shasa Maseh, and an individual who is Chayav Galut, where he took action. He did something that is now making him chayav galut. Bimezid, if he did it intentionally, eino gula, then he does not get galut. That is because galut is only for someone who did it bishogeg, unintentionally. So here, a person who does an action, if they do it unintentionally, they get galut. If they do it intentionally, bimezid, they're not going to get galut. They're then subject to mitah. Now, sometimes you can't give them the mitah because you don't have hatra'ah. You're missing some technical thing. Maybe in those situations you would think he should get galut. The Torah teaches you, no, that galut is only applicable to someone who does it unintentionally. But if they do it intentionally, they do not get galut. Hain, shelo asu maseh, they didn't zomimim who took no action. They simply had dibor. They simply spoke. Bit mezid, enu din shelo iglu. Then in a case of mezid, they certainly should not go into galut. In a case where the person actually did something, unintentionally goes to galut. But if he did it intentionally, it doesn't go to galut. Here where they didn't do any action, they only spoke, then in a case where they do it intentionally, they certainly shouldn't have to go to galut. Where it says, via nutenet, your logic actually would result in us coming to a different conclusion, which is the same logic you're using can be turned around to actually make it that it does come out this way, which is, hu shasamase, because he took action, b'mezid lo ligle. That's why when he does it intentionally, he can't go into galut. Keichad lo havile kapara. So he doesn't get kapara. The severity of his crime is too great to be subject to the kapara of galut. In Maisa, where he took action, it was unintentional, then galut is good enough for him to get kapara. If he took action and it was intentional, then galut is just not good enough to bring him a kapara. And that's why he's precluded from galut. Hein shelo asu maaseh, the Eidim Zomimim who never took an action, b'mezid, when they do it intentionally, Nami liglu, they should go into galut, ke'echid avu kapara, that they should get kapara. You've already noted that the Edim Zomimim's action is less severe or is less of a violation than that of the person who kills intentionally. Since it's a lesser violation, maybe galut would be enough for them and maybe they should get galut. So from your logic, you would actually come to the opposite conclusion, which is that you should go into galut because maybe they are worthy of kapara. But rather, it makes more sense to say, like Reish Lakish before, that it's Gzeret HaKatuv, Hu Yanus Elachatarim, Hu Velo Zomimim. Amar Ula, Remez Leidim Zomimim in the Torah, Minayin. Where do we have a hint at Eidim Zomimim in the Torah? Amar says, Remez Leidim Zomimim? What do you mean a hint to Eidim Zomimim? Haktiv, it's an explicit pasuk in the Torah. You don't have to go to any hint. It's straightforward. Vasitim Lo, Kasher Zamam. You do to them exactly like they wanted to do someone else. It's an explicit din in the Torah. It's not a remez. Ela remez eidim zomimim shalokim in the Torah minayit. Rather, the question that's being posed by Ula is where in the Torah does it seem to indicate that when you can't accomplish hazama with the eidim, that they actually get malkot? Dichtiv, because the pasuk says, Hayitzkiku et hatzadik, v'irshiu et harasha. Pasuk says that you will exonerate the one who is innocent, and you will implicate the one who is guilty. And afterwards it says, Vaya im bin hakota rasha. If the rasha, the one who was found guilty, is deserving of malkot, then he will get malkot. This actually goes back to what we spoke about in the introduction, and maybe why the Masechta starts with Eidim Zomimim, which is the main parshiyah of malkot is found together with Eidim Zomimim. And since it's found together with Edim Zomamim, they brought the first case of Malkot as being a case of Edim Zomamim because of the correlation or the juxtaposition between the two. The Gemara wants to understand here, what do you mean? Mishum de itztigwet atzik v'yershuet arasha v'ayayim bin hilkot arasha? Why is that a prerequisite? Why is it a prerequisite that if you find one party innocent, the other party guilty, then v'ayayim bin hakot arasha, if the Rasha is preserving a Malkot? It doesn't seem to be correlated at all. Who cares of whether you made someone innocent or you made someone guilty? The only thing we need to know is if the guilty party did something that's chayav Malkot, then he gets Malkot. What does that have to do with the Tztiku and the Tzadik? Ella, you have to refigure the case here. Edim shirshu et the Tzadik. Edim came along and made the Tzadik. Tzadik over here means the innocent party. They incriminated him. Vatu Edim achrine. And then another set of Edim come. Vitztiku et the Tzadik demikara. They now exonerate the person who was innocent all along, who is the victim that the Edim Zomim were speaking about. And they make the Edim that testified falsely about him into Rishayim. So the case of Itztigu et Tzadik, Vishu et Rasha is a case where Edim testified falsely, and another Edim come along and say, you couldn't have said that because Imanu Eitem. Then in that case, they've now restored the victim's innocence. That's Itztigu et Tzadik. Vishu et Rasha, now they made those Edim that testified falsely, they incriminate them as Rishayim. Then it says, Vayayim bin Hakot Rasha. In that instance, if they are deserving of Malkot, they'll get Malkot. What's that dependent on? Whether you can do Kashir Zamam. If you can do Kashir Zamam, then they're not Bin Hakot HaRasha. If you can't do Kashir Zamam, then they are Vaya Im Bin Hakot HaRasha. And through that, he sees a hint at this idea that if you can't accomplish Kashir Zamam Lasod Dechiv, then you give Malkot as an alternative. Where it says, but typically, Melo Taneh. Why don't we learn the obligation of Malkot for Edim Zomim from the pasuk of Lo Taneh Bereacha Eid Shaker, that you can't testify falsely. And these individuals were incriminated, were found guilty of lying because the other Edim came along and said, you can't testify here, you were with us, and so you can't testify about the case. So why isn't that the source for Malkot? My answer is, Shem David Lav She'ein Bo Maseh. Because Lo Taneh Bereacha Eid Shaker is a lav that involves no action. And as we'll see later in the Masechta, the juxtaposition in the Torah between the Chiyuv Malkot and Lo Tachsom Shor B'Disho, that one may not muzzle a shor while it is threshing. From there, the Gemara learns that the paradigmatic lav, the paradigmatic lotase by which one gets Malkot, is if it's similar to a case of Lo Tachsom Shor B'Disho. One of the aspects of Lo Tachsom Shor B'Disho is that it is a maseh. You have to actively do something to violate the Isur. Since you have to actively do something, take action in order to violate the Isur, that's one of the standards by which we judge whether someone gets Malkot. So over here, you have a case where there is no Maset, there is no action, because the Edim are simply testifying, they're speaking, and the speaking itself is not considered to be a Maset, even though we saw in Sanhedrin that speaking can be deemed a Maset in certain cases, which is Akimat Sfatav, the moving of the lips. That is a separate topic as to when Dibur is considered a Maiseh or not a Maiseh, but certainly it's not enough of a Maiseh to give you Malkot. That's what it says over here. Lo Taneh Bereacha Eid Shaker is a lav she'ein bo maseh. Kol lav she'ein bo maseh ein lokim alav. A lav that has no action involved with it, you do not get Malkot for. Therefore, your Malkot will not derive from Lo Taneh Bereacha Eid Shaker. At this point, there is a Machloket HaRishonim as to what the ramifications of that are. Does that mean that there is no punishment of Malkot from Lo Taneh Bereacha Eid Shaker? You're patur from Lo Taneh Bereacha Eid Shaker because of the fact that it is a lav she'ein bo maseh, or because now if you include Edim Zomim there, there are possibilities where the person will be subject to a onesh of mitah and not an onesh of Lo Taneh Bereacha Eid Shaker. That means that it's a lav she'eitan lasirat mitat beitin. The fact that Edim Zomim get Malkot is from the drusha that we just made, which is Vitztiku et Tzadik v'Yershu et HaRasha, and that is the source for the Malkot. So that seems to be Rashi's and the Meiri's view. So that would be seemingly the conclusion of the Gemara, is that the Malkot don't derive from Lo Taneh Bereacha Eid Shaker, but rather from the Parshia of Edim Zomim. There are Rishonim, but the Ramban and Tosafot later in the Masechta seem to indicate that belief that once we know you get Malkot because of Eitim Zomimim from the Tzdikri Tzadik V'Yeshua Terasha, then that tells us that despite the fact that Lo Taneh Berecha Eit Shaker is a Lav Shein Bo Maisa, you will still get Malkot in this case. So the Eitim Zomimim come to teach you that Lo Taneh Berecha Eit Shaker still has Malkot associated with it. So those are two ways to formulate the conclusion. Is the conclusion that you don't get Malkot from Lo Taneh Berecha Eit Shaker, you only get it from Vahaya Im Bin HaKot HaRasha? Or is the conclusion of the Gemara from Vahaya Im Bin HaKot HaRasha? It teaches you that Lo Taneh Berecha Eit Shaker will get Malkot despite the fact that it is a Lav She'ein Bo Maaseh. And then you have to deal with the Napkaminot between whether the source for Malkot is Lo Taneh Berecha Eit Shaker versus the source being Vahaya Im Bin HaKot HaRasha. And the nafkamina might be whether you get a separate set of malkot for lo taneh berecha eit shaker if you believe that a lav shein bo maaseh does get malkot, or the question as to whether you're really accomplishing kasher zamam when you get malkot in these cases. Are these malkot for the kasher zamam? Or are these malkot really just from lo taneh berecha eit shaker? Which tarabanan, dal dvarim nemru be'edim zomamim. There are four issues or cases by edim zomamim. Ben Grusha Ben Chalutza. One of them, which we already saw in our Mishnah, is that they will not be made into a Ben Grusha Ben Chalutza. Ben Golim Nari Miklat. Also, we saw that in our Mishnah, that they don't go to Galut. Ben Mishalmim et a Kofer. They don't pay Kofer. Kofer, we know from Pashat Mishpatim, is in a case where a Shor Muad kills another party. The Baalim of the Shor Muad are held accountable for their possessions killing somebody else. They are not put to death for it, but they do have to pay kofar. They have to pay some form of restitution, which we'll discuss in 1 second. Edim zomamim are not subject to that payment of kofar. Ve'nim karim ve'eved ivri. And they are not sold as an eved ivri. So we'll discuss the latter two in the Gemara in a second. Mishom Rabbi Akiva amru af ein mishalmim al pi atzmam. From Rabbi Akiva, we also learn that they don't pay based on their own testimony, because obviously, Rabbi Akiva believes that Eidim Zomamim is a knasu, and we have a principle that modeh b'knas is patur, that a person incriminates themselves with regards to a knas, then they don't have to pay with the knas, because it's modeh b'knas is patur. What the scenario is, and exactly when it works, we'll see in tomorrow's daf, but that's Rabbi Akiva's opinion. So here you have a braita that brings you four instances where Eidim Zomamim are not going to get the punishment they tried to impose on the victim, but rather, seemingly, you'll get Malkot in each of these cases. The Rishonim do ask, why were there only two cases brought in our Mishnah instead of the four cases that are brought over here? Either because the Mishnah was not trying to give you all the examples, it was just trying to show you that there is such a concept by Eidim Zomamim, so it brought you two, but it didn't list them all out. There are other cases. Or, you could argue that the two cases brought by the Mishnah are easy cases. They're easy cases since both of them rely on Gzeret HaKatuv, and we can understand why you wouldn't make someone into a Ben Grusha Ben Chalutza, or you wouldn't give someone Galut, because it's really not Kasher Zamam. It's not necessarily what they were intending to do, because it has impact or broader impact than on themselves. Whereas the cases here of paying Kofar and being sold as an Eved Ivri, why not have it be that they are Kasher Zamam Lasod L'Achiv? It shouldn't be a problem to carry it out. And those limudim are much more involved. And that's why the Mishnah didn't bring those examples. It only brought the two examples that were simple and straightforward. As the Ritva simply suggests, that the two cases they brought here, Galut and the case of Ben Grusha Ben Chalutza, connect you to the Mishnayot locally over here, topics that were either found in Elohein and Echnakim or that are going to be found in Makot. And that's why they brought those two examples, not the other two, which are not necessarily topically connected. The Rabban indicates simply the reason it wasn't included in the Mishnah is because in the case where you don't pay kofar, you don't get malkot. And therefore, it's not similar to the case in the Mishnah. That doesn't necessarily solve the problem by Eved Ivri. But we'll see later on that there are opinions that Eved Ivri sometimes can be take place. And therefore, also wouldn't fit into the case of our Mishnah. Now, the Gemara is going back now through the Braita and says, Ein asim ben grusha uben chalutza, that Eidim Zomim can't be made into ben grusha ben chalutza, kidamran. We already learned that on the Amud Aleph, because it says, Vasitem lo, lo velo lezaro. Ve'en golim lare miklat kidamran. We already learned that at the top of this amud, which is hu yanus elachat harim hu velo zomamim. So that we did. Ve'en mishalmim et ha'kofer. And they do not pay for kofer. Now, Mar has to explain that. Kasavre kufra kapara. The reason being is because we think that kofar really accomplishes kapara, atonement. There are two ways to view the kofar that is paid when the shormuad kills an individual. One way to view it is it's kapara, it's atonement. Someone was killed because of your possessions. You need kapara, and this payment is a form of atonement. On the other hand, you could view it not as being kapara, but rather as restitution. Someone was killed. There's a value to the individual who was killed. Again, in their day where there's an active slave market and people can be sold on the slave market, you can actually determine the price or value of an individual. And so, if you believe that kofar is mimono, it's really restitution, then there's no reason to believe that the Edim Zomim shouldn't get that punishment. They tried to obligate someone to pay money. They should also have to pay that money out or compensate him for what they were, the loss they were trying to create for him. On the other hand, if you say that kofra is kapara, that it gives atonement, then v'hani la b'nei kapara ninu. These individuals aren't either worthy of kapara, or they don't necessitate kapara. Either because of the severity of what they're doing, they're not entitled to the kapara, or you could say that the kapara is a specific prescription of the Torah in a case where a shor muad kills someone. Because as Rashi and the Ramban says over here, that kapara only comes for someone who has mita midei shamayim. That's true of the owner of the ox. It's just not true of the Edim Zomamim over here. So therefore, they're not bnei kapara. But that prescription cannot be then taken and used in other situations like Edim Zomamim. And so they are la bnei kapara ninu. They're just not in that prescription of the Torah. And therefore, the kofar won't work for them. So if you believe that kufra kapara, for either one of the two reasons that we just stated, the Edim Zomamim would not be subject to that kapara. So ma'atana kufra kapara. Who's the author? Which Tana believes that kofar is kapara? Amar Rav Chista, Rabbi Shmuel ben Osher, Rabbi Yochanan ben Brokai. He's the author of the position at kufra kapara. Tanya, you have a bright of Natan Pidyon Nafsho. The owner of the Shor Muad has to redeem his nefesh. Demei Nizak. How do we assess what it is that he pays? Tana Kama says you based it on the value of the victim that was killed. Rabbi Shmuel ben Osher, Rabbi Yochanan ben Brokai, Demei Mazik. It is the value of the owner of the shore that is being paid over here. My law, Bahakam Iflagay. Wouldn't you suggest over here that this is the fundamental machloket in that Nabraita? The Mar Savar Kufra Mamona. The Tanakama believes that kofar is monetary restitution. Therefore, the way that you determine how much you pay is by assessing the value of the victim. Because that's the loss that you created. Well, Mar Savar, and Rabbi Shmuel ben Osher, Rabbi Yochanan ben Brokai believes that kufra kapara. It's a kapara. Now what's the best way to do kapara in atonement is that you redeem yourself. You pay your value. That's kapara, because you're redeeming yourself for the guilt that you carry for the death of this individual. Samara papa, though, that doesn't have to be the case. The kuliyama kufra kapara. Everybody agrees that kufra works as kapara. This is what the argument's about. It's not a question of whether it's an atonement. The question is, what is the price that you need to pay to attain that atonement? Do we look at the value of the owner of the shore, as if he's redeeming himself? Or do we look at it at the value of the nizak, the victim? The kapara is that you give restitution to the individuals who you caused this loss to, so your atonement is accomplished by you, in a sense, redeeming the victim that was killed. That's the machloket is here. So now, my time, I the Rabbanon. What's the reasoning of the Tanakam or the Rabbanon that argue on Rabbi Shmuel ben Osher, Rabbi Yochanan ben Brokai? Why do they say that you use the Nizak's value? Nemar Hashata Lamato. It says Hashata below. Nemar Hashata Lamalo. And it says Hashata above. Malalan ben Nizak. Just like over there, it is by the Nizak. Afkan bin Nizak, so too over here by the Nizak. What they're referencing to is the parshia that we discussed in Sanhedrin, where an individual hits a pregnant woman. And there the Torah says, if he causes the pregnant woman to miscarry, then he has to compensate for the miscarried children. If there's an ason, if the woman is killed, then he doesn't pay for the miscarriage because of Kimle Deraba Minei, but he will be subject to mita. There we actually had a machloket in the Gemara in Sanhedrin as to whether that mita means kofar or that mita is actual death penalty. That has to do with the machloket as to whether when one intends for one party and ends up killing another party, are you subject to mitah or are you only chayav kofer? That was a machloket that we saw in Sanhedrin. But in that parshia discussing the miscarriage, the terminology used by the Torah is v'chein atzu anashim nafu ishara v'yatzu yiladeh v'lo yason anosh yanesh kasher yashit alav bala yisham natan b'flilim. Kasher yashit alav, it uses the terminology, the value that is brought to him by the husband of the woman who he caused to miscarry, v'natan b'flilim, and then in court he'll have to pay for that money. So the terminology is yashit. In the case of the shor mu'ad that kills, it also says im kofer yushat alav v'natan pidyon nafsho kol asher yushat alav. So it uses the same terminology, yushat and yashit. So what the Chachamim say is yashit by the woman who miscarries, and there's clearly the value of the miscarried children, the nizak, it's the victim's value that you're speaking about. So too the word yushat over here means the victim's value. And how do you get pidyon nafsho? How do you get kapara, redeem yourself? Yushat alav, by the value of the victim that was killed over here. So that's the Chachamim. It's not a literal gzeir shel, but it seems more likely a giloi milta, that the yushat that is meant over here is similar to the yashit by the case of the miscarriage, and therefore you're dealing with the value of the nizak. On the other hand, Rabbi Shmuel says, v'natan pidyon nafsho ktiv. The pasuk is explicit. It says, you give the pidyon, the redemption of your nefesh. Redemption of your nefesh means your value, and that's how you pay for it. Rabbanan, in, you're right, pidyon nafsho ktiv, it says that he's going to get atonement or redeem himself. How you accomplish that the Torah tells you pay it out the victim's value. So yes, it's pidyon nafsho, it is a kapara for him, but that kapara is accomplished through paying the value of the victim. So that's machlok between them, but in that way, everybody agrees that kufra kapara, the kofar is considered to be kapara. If that's the case, Eden Zomamim wouldn't pay it because they are la b'nei kapara ninhu. Although the Ritva does ask of Yerit, even if they are not b'nei kapara, they still try to obligate someone to pay money. And why don't they just have to pay because they try to cause someone to pay money? So the Ritva concludes, based on the fact that we cannot compel an individual to pay kapara, since kapara is atonement, he has to do it willingly, and we don't compel him if he doesn't want to do it willingly. So if that's the case, then he wouldn't have been obligated money, Elaim Keni chose to pay the kapara. And for that, we can't make them chayav. Although, the Rambam, who disagrees with the Ramban that we mentioned before, says that you will get malkot when you cannot pay the kapara, then the answer to the question is, in lokim and mishalmim. Since they're going to get malkot, they won't have to pay. Whereas according to the Ramban, who believes there is no malkot when you can't pay kapara, the question arises, and that's what the Ritva says over here, that you don't compel individuals to pay kapara, and therefore it was not a definite loss that they were creating for this individual. So now, v'einim karim b'evet ivri, that was the last case in the Braita, that the Eidim Zomim don't get sold as evet ivri. So Rav Amnuna l'meimar, Rav Amnuna wanted to suggest, it's a case where he has the value. A ganav, who is caught stealing and doesn't have the monetary means by which to pay back that which he stole, then he is placed into slavery as an evet ivri in order to pay out the money that he owed to this individual. So now, if they come and testify that this individual stole, and the individual they're saying so stole has sufficient funds to pay for the gneva, then he would not be sold into slavery. We say here, heichad eitleh didei, here where the victim that they are lying about has sufficient funds that would then prevent him from becoming evet ivri if he was found guilty of stealing and had to repay it, demigo deilo mizdabin inu namilo mizdabnu. Just like he wouldn't be sold into slavery, so too they will not be sold into slavery. So even though they don't have money, or even if they do have money, the fact that they were only trying to accomplish this individual having to pay money, not put him as an evet ivri, their punishment also can't be that he's made into an evet ivri. In a case where he doesn't have the means by which to pay for the gneva, even though the Eidim Zomamim have sufficient funds to pay for the gneva, mizdavnu, then maybe they wouldn't be sold in as an evet ivri. So that was the havamina that Rav Amnuna had, which is that the case where we don't make you into an evet ivri, as in a case where the victim wouldn't have been made into an Eved Ivri. So since he wouldn't have been made into an Eved Ivri, the Kashya Zamam would not be applicable to make you into an Eved Ivri. But in a case where he doesn't have sufficient means, and he would have been sold in as an Eved Ivri based on your testimony, in Ochanami, that you would get a punishment of being sold into slavery as an Eved Ivri, even though you have the funds to pay for the Geneva. So why don't they say to him in that case, Ian Tavalach, if you had sufficient funds, Miavamizdavdant, would you have been sold into slavery? Would you have been sold as an Eved Ivri? Ananami lo mizdavinan. We too should not be sold in as an Eved Ivri because we have sufficient funds to pay for it. So do to us like we would have done to you. If you had funds, you would have been an Eved Ivri. Since we have funds, we shouldn't be sold in as an Eved Ivri. Ella summer of Amnuna the Maimar. So this is what Rav Nuna thought to say. Hani milehechi de itle, ole di de, ole di du. I would have thought this din that they don't get me made into an Eved Ivri is whether the victim has sufficient funds, so he wouldn't have been made into an Eved Ivri, or whether the Eidim Zalmamim have sufficient funds in order to pay for it, so they shouldn't be made into an Eved Ivri. Vahecha de le, lo di de, velo di du, mizdavne. But in a case where neither the Eidim nor the victim has sufficient funds, so then their testimony would have resulted in the victim being sold as an Eved Ivri, and they too have don't have sufficient funds. They should also be sold as an Eved Ivri. That's what you would have thought. So that's the one case where you would have thought possibly they should be punished as an Eved Ivri. So Amalei Rova, the answer to that question is that Gzeirot HaKatuv, Nikbar B'Gneivato Arach Rachmano, Torah says he will be sold into slavery because of his Gneiva. It's only because of theft that you can be sold as an Eved Ivri, not because of Zamamo, not because you were Eidim Zomamim. So only the person who actively engaged in theft, if he's caught and can't pay for it, will he be sold as an Eved Ivri. Otherwise, nobody will be sold in as a result of a case of this being an Eved Ivri. Therefore, the Eidim Zomamim are precluded from being made into an Eved Ivri, despite the fact that you might have thought in that case they should be made into an Eved Ivri. Okay, we're going to stop here by the two dots on the bottom of Bet, Amud Bet.